Welcome to Hoop du Jour with moi, Peter Vesey, presented by the National Basketball Retired Players Association.
As part of the Hoop du Jour experience, we're giving our audience a homework assignment. You're about to hear part two of our conversation with the man who needs no introduction, the living history of the NBA, Jerry West.
And if you missed part one, make sure you go back and check that out. So, Jerry, let's go ahead to 1981 when Westhead won a championship and then was fired X amount of games, kind of like Baylor retiring. A five-game winning streak, he was fired. And Jerry Buss wanted you to coach the team. And I know it's been talked about, this whole how it happened, but I think it's so intriguing the way it happened. So he wanted you to coach it, and Riley was going to be – Pat Riley was going to be your assistant. He was Westhead's assistant. Tell me how that worked out. How did you get out of not coaching?
Well, we agreed to sort of do this, and I knew it was something I shouldn't have done, okay? And so we go to the press conference, and I said that right in the middle of the press conference, they asked me about, and I said, you know, I said, I'm going to be, and Pat's going to make the decisions, and I'm going to be here with him, and but I'm not going to be the head coach. I'm going to be here with him. And I kind of looked out of the corner of my eye, and the late Jerry Buss, who I absolutely love, I think he looked at me like, are you crazy? But again, everything I ever did. And also, I think for Pat, of course, it gave him a start. And he, you know, he was very successful and been very successful in all the endeavors he's been involved in basketball. But he was where Pat was much more driven, you know, practices were very difficult. And it got to the point that once the season was over, and I've talked to Pat, it's not something I don't feel comfortable talking about. I talked to Pat a number of times and said, Pat, my gosh, you know, we're late in the year. And I said, we got the best record in basketball. We don't need to be killing these guys. But that was Pat's personality. He played the same way. And when he went with the Knicks, I think you saw a team there that was tough as nails, but they had the right kind of people. But his best, when he was here in Los Angeles, we had, I think, the greatest basketball teams I've ever seen in the 80s. I think they were the best, and people say, oh, they couldn't play today. No, they would play and dominate. It was an all-star team.
Right.
An all-star team. And big, score, defend, our bench was terrific. A lot of really great players, and they fit together. And Pat, you know, Pat had them really organized, and it was fun to watch. Going to games, and instead of wondering what kind of effort you're going to see, with the people we had, Irvin Johnson, kind of the leader of the band, we were going to win, and particularly late in the year, we were going to win.
Jerry, why did Westhead get fired? Was it Magic who wanted him fired? Was it Buss who wanted to up-tempo the offense? What was it? I mean, he took a lot of grief, Magic, from me, for sure.
Well, you know, I think, you know, Irvin loves to play the game, okay? He loved to play. And I think at times that, you know, watching our team, we became so mechanical. And this team wasn't built to be mechanical. And I think the what was really amazing about that, once Paul left, this team really took off in terms of, you could see the enthusiasm return. Was that Paul? I don't know. Was it the way we played? I will never know. Okay, because I wasn't even aware until somebody told me that Jerry Buss didn't tell me. I heard it a little bit later, and I went, oh, my gosh, what's going on here? And this is when it led to Pat and me being involved. But what was ironic about it is when Paul left there, he changed the way he played, and he had the highest scoring.
The way he coached,
Yes, he changed the way he coached.
Yeah.
And he had one saying that when this is all over, they asked him questions, and he was very bright himself, very bright. And he said, the almond tree bears its fruit in silence. And he never really said anything. He didn't try to defend.
Right.
He wasn't negative about it, but it had to be really hurtful for him. And obviously it was shocking that it happened the way it happened.
Very, very interesting, though, that you said before that you told Kareem when you took over as coach that you wanted to make him the focal point of the offense.
Yes.
Now, Westhead still made Kareem the offensive focal point, but Magic wanted to go up speed, as you're saying. You know, maybe that was the way to go at that time. Kareem bought into it, and there was no problem. But just interesting that he was doing what you were doing.
Yes. Well, it's just almost the opposite. In the sense that we didn't have a point guard or equivalent of a leader. We really didn't. It was just a cohesive bunch of guys that were very mechanical in the way we played.
Right.
If you have someone like Irvin Johnson around, you don't have to be mechanical. He is a genius with the ball in his hand.
Right.
And the way he played the game, the leadership, the excitement that he brought. And he played every night. I mean, my gosh, he competed every night. And a lot of times you go out on the court and some nights some guys don't feel like they have it. But somebody like him uplifted everyone. If you have one of those players on your team who has a lot of energy, you know, I watched Russell Westbrook today. My goodness, this guy has energy like crazy. And some of the things he's doing for someone his size, you know, he doesn't shoot the ball great. But my God, his effort, is there anyone gives any more effort than him? If they are, I want to see one. I have never seen one give the kind of effort that Russell does.
Yeah, I had a dinner with Kobe right before I retired when I was in L.A., and he brought up Westbrook's name as his favorite player, which is not surprising at all because of the way Kobe played. But he brought it up, and he said that to me. But let's go to Kobe, okay? Now you're the president or the general manager of the Lakers. Please explain to me how you were able to maneuver getting Shaq and Kobe at the same time. And I'll just say one thing. Vancouver, I know you were trying to get cap money from them by giving them players, and they turned you down, they turned you down, they turned you down. Finally, You did it. You're smiling. You gave them Peeler and Lynch, and you got two number two picks.
Well,
how did that happen?
You know, Pete, probably, you know, everyone is anxious, and particularly all the big markets and people who have a lot of money to spend. And frankly, the free agent markets was, you know, remember the Kansas City Royals. They developed all the players for the New York Yankees.
That's right. That was their farm.
It was their farm system. And these small market teams really, frankly, probably have no chance of attracting a free agent unless some of the bigger markets want them. And unfortunately, it's the horrible part of all sports. They're called agents today and players today. They're so into all the social media stuff, which brings an enormous amount a potential for future earnings as a pitch man for some companies. And so agents know how valuable just being in the right city really is. So at that point in time, it was a weird year. There's kind of a lockout year. You know, you really couldn't talk to free agents, but probably the greatest year ever for free agents we have ever seen in this league. We may not see one like that again. You look at the players who were out there, my goodness. And somebody said, well, you know, you couldn't get Shaquille O'Neal. I said, well, how about Lonzo Mourning? He's not bad. How about Mutombo? He's not bad. So going into that year, as you're well aware, I think Irvin Johnson was forced to retire. And so to get to a point where we would have someone to be kind of the gatekeeper in terms of fan appeal, and also someone that could be the enormous stepping stone to having a championship team again. And that was Shaquille O'Neal.
Right.
And then during the draft, to get to a point in time to have the money to be able to the additional money to appeal to Shaquille, where we would have more money to offer him.
Right.
then it was vitally important that we be able to trade
Peeler and Lynch.
Hold on for a second. Vlade Divac.
Oh, Vlade. Okay, Vlade.
And so then, in the process of doing this stuff, we're doing this kind of flying by our seat of our pants because we couldn't talk to any of the free agents at that point in time. So tried like crazy. We'd worked out Kobe two times, and it was just, I mean, it was evident to me and anyone who had been there and had been involved in the league, this was the most talented player in the draft, period. He was. It was not in vogue to draft shorter players, and you know he wasn't short. He's on 6'6". But anyone big who had some ability, teams would take those guys. But for some reason, you know, he was pushed down the line. And again, his agent was Arne Tellem, who is a great friend of mine, still is today, and also Joe and Pam Harris. I mean, Pam Bryant. Right. We're also friends. I knew Joe. And during that time, we started talking to them a little bit about, after our workouts that we'd seen him, if we could get him, he would be an enormous piece going forward. Because if you were around him, you knew his effervescence of a player, his his enormous talent. But he was 17 years old. I've never seen a player that young be that talented. And also the fact he just loved to play and compete. So we had this plan that once we found out this is the route we're going to try to go, and Jerry Buss was very upbeat in the fact he just kept encouraging me, let's do this, do this. Because he knew that what we needed was someone who was going to draw people and have a big personality coming to Los Angeles. So we got into the process of the draft, and we finally found a way to get him at number 13. I did not think there's any way, shape, or form that people could pass this kid. I did not. And Jersey was going to draft him. They were going to draft him. And Arne and the Bryant family told them that they didn't want him to play near Philadelphia, nor in Philadelphia. So he just kept sliding down the board, and I'm like, gosh, we have a deal.
Yeah.
With Bob, late Bob Bass, who was a wonderful man. And everyone complained, how can you give a starting center up for a 17-year-old kid? Well, you know, there was a two part to this thing, Shaquille right. O'Neal and him.
Right.
And so I developed a relationship with Shaquille over the phone. We talked sometimes two or three times a day. And I kept telling him we had better players and give him a chance to win a championship here in Los Angeles they did in Orlando. And I truly believed it, that we had better players surrounding him. And I said, just because you know these guys and some of them are friends, if you truly want to win at the highest level, I can assure you this is your best chance. And so finally, he was playing on the Olympic team that year. We finally made a deal, and I went to sign a contract. It was like supposed to meet right after midnight, and they had the plane that was carrying the team. I think they were working out, I believe, in Orlando. I think that's where they were. I'm not 100%. So he came to Los Angeles. We got this contract. His agent was there, and I was with our attorney, the late Jim Pursey. And we get there, and now it's, you know, we thought he'd be there about 12:15. Now it's about 2:30 in the morning. And we were on a 69th floor. And I said, if this guy doesn't get here soon, I better put a parachute on, or I'm going out that window. So all the time and effort had been put into it. And we didn't have very many people involved at all, hardly anyone.
Right.
And so, when Shaquille said he'd do it, I said, I have to make another trade. And I said, make sure you tell Jerry Buss that you're coming, okay? We're going to pay you this. And he agreed to come. So we traded two players to Vancouver to have enough money to pay him. And then we had made this deal to get Kobe Bryant.
But Jerry, two things. Let me go backwards. If the Orlando Magic does not lowball Shaquille O'Neal, they had run some stupid voting thing in the newspaper about should they, the paper did, should they pay Shaquille O'Neal what he's asking, and the fans said, you know, thumbs down. Had they not lowballed him, I know his agent, Leonard Armato, wanted him to come out to California, yes, out to L.A. But would he have stayed?
You know, I really don't know. I will tell you this. He's one of my favorite people, Pete. He really is, because he never changes. And we had developed an incredible relationship over the phone. And even today, you know, we'll say hello or text each other every once in a while. They had offered him, the real story was, they offered him a 2-year deal, I believe, 2 or 3 year deal, when we were offering him a 5-year deal. Mm-hmm. And they said the reason, I think the owner met with him, and to my recollection, the owner told him that he didn't know if he wanted to be there. And that's why they offered him. But after they found out that he was leaving,
and they emptied up.
They wanted to go back and revisit it, and yeah, they didn't do it. But it was like,
it's crazy, Jerry. The guy took them to the finals, you know, and now you're gonna give them only 2 years. It makes no sense at all. Too late to come back. But as far as Kobe goes, you know, Arne Tellem definitely, you know, threatened the Nets and said that, you know, his client would not come and play there if you draft him. And so I asked Kobe about that, maybe at that dinner that I spoke about earlier. It was sometime I asked him, I said, well, so what would you have done? Where were you going to go? Were you going to go to Europe, go back to Italy and play over there? He said, no. He said, I would have come and played for the Nets. He said, I definitely would have. I said, well, what happened? What do you think would have happened had you come and played for the Nets? He said, John Calipari would still be coaching.
I'm not sure that he would have had that much as much success there as he did.
Well, whatever. It was a good line anyway. It was
well, John and I have talked about it a long time.
Oh, really?
Kerry Kittles, who was a great guy, really nice fellow.
Yeah, that's what they drafted him. Right.
They drafted him, and it worked out pretty well for us. I'll say that.
You think? So, Jerry, you know, you love Jerry Buss and you know, things were really good. You're winning championships with the Lakers, and then you leave the Lakers. And I've always felt that, you know, you were a Laker for life. You might have taken a few years off in between, you know, playing and coaching and whatever, but you know, you're kind of like Tommy Heinsohn was with the Celtics, Celtic for life. And you left. Why?
Pete, I didn't need to be there anymore.
Why?
Honestly, well, I tell you what.
Were you listening to you?
I honestly didn't feel like I was wanted. I really didn't. I think that, you know, a lot of changes are going on over there in terms of, you know, people being around that hadn't been around before. Everyone thinks that this is something easy to sustain. It's not, because every once in a while you're able to go out and acquire free agents. And I'd like to think we did it on our own with a very small staff. No, Leonard Armato had some very good players, but he wasn't going to direct every player toward us. And that happens today. And if you look, look at the Lakers today, my goodness, they have one agent has really provided them with a stronghold. But most important thing, and if I were ever going to give any advice to any young person working in the league, the most important thing is to have relationships with the agents. I don't care if you don't like the agent. I don't care if you don't enjoy working with him. That is vital in today's world, to be able to have respect and understand and appreciate what agents do today. And you have more of them around. You have people that are, you know, striving to get involved in this business because they love basketball, and I think a lot of them like to be around athletes. But at that time, it was just really, really, really different. And for me, I didn't feel wanted. And I just felt that
Didn't feel wanted by who? By Jerry Buss?
No, I don't know who, but I just didn't feel wanted. Pete, I trust my instincts. I've done this a couple times in my life.
Right.
I trust my instincts, and honestly, I thought it was I don't know if they would have offered me another contract, and I don't mean that in a divisive way, because sometimes, you know, you stay too long at the fair. I would rather leave anything in my life that where I did not feel wanted, and it was nothing to do with, you know, everyone makes Phil Jackson part of Phil Jackson. It really wasn't. He was just different. Okay, he was different. I didn't have a relationship with him, which was fine.
Let me stop you there. How is that? How's that possible? Because I was kind of involved in getting you in touch with Phil Jackson's agent at the time, Musburger. How can, and this happens all the time, how can a general manager or president hire somebody as a coach, and then suddenly, once the guy's hired, you're not as smart anymore? You know, you're not.
I like, Pete, honestly, I like working relationships with coaches. And Phil was quiet. So he really was quiet. And you know, for the first, oh, my goodness, for a while there, we did things together at night. And Bill Bradley was running for president. We went to a couple things for him, I believe. Mm-hmm. It just, you know, as I say, when I go to practice, I go to practice to watch. I don't go there I never met with coaches about who to play. The only thing I'd ever say to a coach, who would you like for me to try to acquire if we need one player to that you like that can help us? That was the only thing I talked about, coach. I never had meetings with them. I never set into a meeting with coaches and players. I think it's not a general manager's job. And if I were a coach, I would be offended.
Right.
I wouldn't want one in there. I don't care who he is. And we have a number of general managers do that today, and I think it's wrong.
Were you offended big time when you went into the locker room and Phil asked you to leave the locker room?
Well, it wasn't exactly asked me to leave. It was after the game. I used to never go in a game. For the game, I might go in, wish everyone well, and leave. No interaction, say hello to coach, good luck tonight, coach, and leave. And after the game, he wasn't very happy with the performance. And I would always go into a back room, and I thought he was done. And I walked in there, and the language wasn't very good, but never went back in the locker room again. And after that, as I say, when you don't feel welcome, you don't feel welcome.
Right. Okay.
Certainly, I had great respect for him. We made him the highest paid coach. It was my idea to sell Jerry Buss on it, and it worked, and we won. So he was more important than me being around.
Not a hard sell, though, Jerry. I mean, he won 3 championships, you know. But whatever. Let me just switch gears a little bit. I don't want to take it out of context, but. Now you're with the Warriors as a consultant, and you're involved there. And the word out from the Bay Area media is that Mark Jackson won't allow you at practices.
Oh, gosh, no.
Well, I know, I called you about it and asked you about it, and you said that's not true. And I asked you at the time, did any other media person from that area ever call you? You said no. To this day, they still say Mark Jackson wouldn't allow Jerry West at his practices.
That is an absolute lie. Mark Jackson and I talk frequently, okay?
Right.
I've been trying to help him get a job in the NBA.
I know that, Jerry. Yeah.
And do you think I would do something like that if that would have happened? No, not true.
I know that, but I'm telling you, it's still circulating. It's an amazing thing.
The only time I would go to practice if I were up there for a game or the Warriors would have me doing something, that's the only time I would even go. Pete, I don't participate in anything with coaches. If coaches want to talk about something or ask something, what do you think about this player, that player, fine. I never would make a suggestion unless somebody would ask me that question.
I know you love to go to practices. We spoke last week and you were on the way to the Clipper practice. And, right. I said that you probably lead the league in attending and participating in practices. And you said Iverson does. No, you don't.
Well, I enjoy, Pete. I really do enjoy. I guess it's, you know, as I say, I mentioned earlier, find something you love and you'll never work a day in your life.
Right.
I enjoy being around and watching players and coaches prepare for games. You know, what are they trying to do a little bit different? Are they doing things differently when they're playing different teams? I sort of like to know that before I go to the game, what you can look for, what you can anticipate. It's just part of, almost part of being a player again, to just want to know what coaches are trying to do. I don't participate, period.
You gave me a great reason the other day, or a great thing about you that you love. What about the ball? What did you say?
The bouncing of a ball in a gym. I remember a lot of times in the summer at West Virginia University when it was hot and no air conditioning in the gym, I used to go down there and there'd be no one there. And just there's something about the rhythm of a ball on the floor. And there is a rhythm to it. When there's not a rhythm to it, you know you're doing something wrong. Right. And it's just been part of my life forever. And, you know, I've had some incredible relationships with people that I've known through the game. Pete, I don't hate anybody. Okay, I don't. I respect people for performance. I respect people for how they treat people. I don't hate anybody. But there's certain things I'm sensitive to. And if I don't feel wanted, I'm gone, period.
Jerry, would you have come back to be part of the Lakers as a consultant, a consigliere, whatever, when Magic was hired? Would you have come back and been his right-hand man, had they asked you?
They were never going to ask me, Pete.
Why?
They were just never going to ask me.
Would you have come back had they asked you?
I don't think so, Pete. It would have been difficult. A lot of water passes under the bridge, and you know, I see, and it's not, you know, I saw the other day who Jeannie Buss is, made a statement that the five most important Lakers.
Yes.
One of the most offensive things I've ever heard in my life. Really offensive.
I was going to ask you about it. Okay, so the five she named were Kareem, Magic, Kobe, LeBron, and Phil Jackson.
Right. Well, this put it this way: I was there a lot of times and had a lot of success, and would be curious to know why. If they would have had that success, if I hadn't been there. And we had, Pete, we had a little small staff, and I don't ever take credit for stuff. I don't. But when I was around, maybe I was just a good luck charm, okay? But I do know that when this thing fell apart, there was a lot of years that they weren't very good.
Well, Jerry, let me be frank. I know you want to cut in, but just, I think in listening to that, what she said, I think she was caught off guard, you know, just in her defense a little bit, because she left off Magic too. And then they said, yeah, well, you didn't say Magic. Oh, yeah, well, Magic should be no more. So I believe she was just a little harried there. So,
yeah, we all. For a second.
What's that?
I don't believe it for a second, dude.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I would like to kind of back up the bus for just a minute and talk about and not want to gloss over the success that Jerry had in Memphis with certainly it seemed to be an odd choice at the time, bringing Cubie Brown back, and what led to that, and for a team that had never been much of anything to get to the playoffs, what, 3 years in a row?
Yes.
In that market and made the team relevant.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people that you're around that are coaches that obviously you learn from other coaches. Some people have a better way of presenting it. You know, it's like a class. People can talk about the same subject if you're a student. And I'll never forget, I had an English literature class. And English literature for me, a kid going to college at West Virginia University, I'm stressing, scratching my head. And my God, it's like it's unheard of for me to want to go to an English literature class. But we had a teacher that just had this appeal. Mm-hmm. I couldn't wait to go to his classes. I could not wait. And probably the most fun of any classes I've ever had. And he was, everyone loved this guy. And he go, and I had another one. I went in there. I couldn't wait to get out of class. Mm-hmm. Couldn't wait to get out of class. I did not have that appeal. But you have certain people that present things to you in a different way. And Hubie Brown is the best clinician I have ever seen in my life. He is a, he just so organized. I mean, there's nothing that he misses in a game as a coach, nothing. And I think probably maybe the happiest I've ever been for a person was Hubie Brown when he won Coach of the Year, won 50 games with the Memphis team. That team was in Vancouver for like 13 years or something like that. The most games they won were 23. My first year in Memphis, we won, I think, 29. And I said, I think we're good enough if we get the right coach to organize this coach and have instilled discipline that this team can be pretty good. I'll never forget that night, first playoff game. Everything in the building was sold out. They presented Hubie with the Coach of the Year award, and everyone had white on and everything. Even thinking about today, it gives me a great feeling. He did an unbelievable job.
And he, you know, unfortunately, he got sick, and he ended up leaving.
Well, on a Thanksgiving day, I get a call, and he says, I just don't think I can do this anymore. And it was probably one of the most disappointing days ever, because it was during the season and we just really started to pick it up again, and he's gone. And, you know, it's right in the middle of the season. You can do something about it over the course of the summer, but he just did an unbelievable job. He made these players believe, but instead of seeing half-hearted efforts, you didn't see that anymore. His efforts of this team were unbelievable. Right. And I was so proud of him, so happy for him, because, you know, people, and particularly in the media, they can write all kind of things that are just not true. And even some of the things I've said here today, it was just, when talking about the Lakers, it's time for me to go.
Right.
And why should I put them in a difficult position? Or why should I feel unhappy? I wanted to do it on my terms. And that was the one time that maybe I was most shocked in my life that Hubie, at that point in time, walked away. If it, after, as say, it was after the season was over, I would have completely understood it.
Right, right. Jerry, let's go to your current job with the Clippers, okay? I don't understand. I'm not reading the papers in LA, you know, at all, really. But I don't think there was enough made of the fact that the Clippers allowed Harrell to just walk away from the team as a free agent during the summer after he'd been the sixth, seventh best man in the NBA, and then you trade Lou Williams, who was the sixth man almost every year of his career. You know, in the span of, you know, months, what happened that those two guys who were so important to the Clippers, why were they allowed to go? Well, one was traded.
First of all, Pete, I don't make any decisions, okay? I don't.
Well, you might know something.
No, I have a voice, but I don't make final decisions on anything. And I'm not shy with my voice, by the way. If I really feel something, I feel something. But I think in any situation, we have a new coach. Doc was not there anymore. And the organization somewhere along the way has to look at the numbers. And I'm talking about players' salaries. Even though Steve Ballmer is by far the richest owner, and a great guy. Very reminds me very, very much of Jerry Buss, except that he is, you know, so much more successful. And people always measure success by financial. And when you look at businessmen, he is really unique. And being around him is like a breath of fresh air. It's very much like Jerry Buss. I just love being around Steve, but I was much closer, did a lot more things with Jerry, but well, Steve lives up in the state of Washington. And but anyway, during that period of time, they were trying to do a lot of different things. And in the course of doing a lot of different things, they're going to look at all options. But I think the reason that Lou was moved was the fact that we needed somebody that could get this team into an offense. And Rajon Rondo, if you watch him play, Pete, he's a genius.
No, I love Rondo. I've told him this.
He's been, and Lou Williams, I'm telling you, was one of my favorite people. I just loved him.
Right.
But Rondo he's been really good for this team. He has. Even though we're not, you know, we've played three games in a row where our effort hasn't been the best. This is a team that's got talent. It's this talented team. As far as Montrez, I don't even know if they got to the point where other teams were trying to sign him, and he eventually ends up with the Clippers.
Lakers. Yeah, with the Lakers. Yeah, so he walks across the court and goes to another locker room. Hold on a second.
Yeah. Well, he's still, you know, something again. He was one of my favorites too. I just loved his effort every night. You know, they brought in Serge Ibaka, who's bigger. Obviously, he's been on part of a championship team, and he's during the playoff. Smaller players are much more difficult to play because the games tighten up, the defenses tighten up, and Montrez is tireless energy. I mean, he never stops playing. Again, that's what I like in players. I like players that love to compete. But the reality is we have Serge Ibaka instead of Montrezl Harrell.
Mm-hmm. Jerry, let me throw a few names at you, okay, as we wind it down, okay? Elgin, we've talked about him at length. Give me your thoughts on Elgin's passing. Were you the person who introduced him or got him the job with Donald Sterling? Did you have anything to do with that?
Oh, my goodness.
Should I bring up his name at all? Am I allowed to? Or?
Well, as I say, Elgin was someone that I was so close to. The way he interacted with me, the way I interacted with him, he was like, many ways, a big brother. I used to go out and watch him in practice. I'd watch some things he did. And I learned an awful lot from how he conducted himself with the writers. Not controversial. I'd like to think I'm not controversial. I'm just honest. And the stuff we shared together, the talks, you know, I'm just fresh out of college and everyone had to go to school for 4 years, Pete. And after games, you know, you never went to sleep and you could play the next night in a different city, the night after that, a different city. But just to hear him talk and how funny he was, but also the seriousness of some of our conversation. And I'd always be in a room that very rarely would – there would be one white guy, me, and probably four black guys playing cards. And the conversations that we had, I just felt such a camaraderie with those guys because I didn't play with any minorities when I was in college. Against, but not – and I just – I never had a black roommate. I mean, I never had a white roommate when I was a player. I didn't want one. I just felt it was a great learning experience for me and different conversations, things that they'd seen to their friends, things they had experienced that were god-awful. It was a great learning experience for me personally. But as a player, you know, he was almost like king-like on a basketball court. You could see him have his hands on his hip, and he was like looking over his domain. And I still have a picture of Bill Russell with the same thing, with his hand and hip. He looked and acted regal. Both of them did. They had a special just look about them. And if you've ever seen a racehorse that's retired, if you see them out in the pasture and everything, and I'm not certainly not comparing a person to a racehorse, but these horses know they're special. They know they're special. Mm. They'll come up to the fence and they'll look at you, and they've gotten massive after they retired.
Yeah.
He was special.
Right.
He was special. And only because of the way my brain thinks, I do look at people like that. I do think they're special people. I've seen a lot of them in this league.
Right.
A lot of them I'd like to know better, because to me, again, anything I can learn about what makes this world go around, what makes it a better place, how can we make it a better place, I want to hear from those people. And if you're a teammate, they're going to open up to you. Some people are so closeted in how they interact with people of a different race. We're all the same, Pete. And the way people treat people in this country is disgusting. I'm embarrassed of some of the things I see that go on. And sometimes you'd like to feel like you can help make a difference. I just see awful times right now, and killing of people. There has to be a better way. It's disgusting, to be honest with you.
Jerry, regarding Elgin, as far as his legacy is concerned, it just amazed me that not until he died did he get the recognition he's been lacking for 20, 30 years. It's like people suddenly discovered how great Elgin was. So to me, that was sinful all these years that happened. And then I think working for Donald Sterling hurt his legacy because for obvious reasons.
Well, Pete, you're right. I used to say all the time, because he was, you know, when he retired, no one really kept any archives to this day. You couldn't, and you go watch some of these films and they look like they're in slow motion, almost like those old tick, 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 tick things that they have. And I will tell you, and for all basketball fans, this was one truly unique, incredible player. His instincts on the court, offensive rebound. He had a great nose for the ball. And remember earlier I talked about instincts, okay? He had those. And he had magnificent hands. He could, you know, he knew how to shoot the ball off the board. He was like watching a great pool player banking shots and putting it over here to be in line for another one. How he could shoot a shot and pick it and get the rebound. It looked like almost passing to himself. A unique skill.
Yeah.
But again, as a teammate, that was just being around him. Oh my gosh. Funny, clever. And he gave me so many nicknames, and like Zeke from Cabin Creek. And
gave you that?
Yeah. I hated that. I hated that word. I hated that word, okay? I hated it because, you know, people people from West Virginia, Tweety Bird because of my voice.
Oh, right.
Twang.
Jerry, you think you got it bad. You know what Hubie nicknamed me? The Viper. I mean, come on. You have to live with the Viper.
Yeah.
You know, Kobe and I used to argue all the time about who was more poisonous, whose nickname, you know, the Black Mamba or the Viper.
Well, Pete, no, there's another one I used to kid him about.
What?
I said, you know that in this world, there's an animal that kills every Black Viper. I mean, every mongoose, every Black Viper. It's called the mongoose.
The mongoose, yeah.
Black Mamba never wins a battle against the mongoose.
No, that's true.
And I, wait, no, that's true. And
yeah,
I used to time that I was a mongoose. I'm going to get you, okay? But, and again, Kobe was fun. And when you got him out of the environment of, you know, when preparing for a game, he was a lot of fun, too.
But, how did your relationship end with him? I mean, I've been hearing a little bit about, you know, that it just wasn't that good. For whatever reason, you can tell me if it's not true, but I thought that, you know, when you were doing the book, that he was maybe the only person who wouldn't agree to be interviewed.
Well, it was because of his agent, Rob Palenka. It wasn't because of him. Kobe would have done it.
What happened?
Well, Rob Palenka asked the writer, he said, submit a list of questions and we'll supply the answers back. And I told him, no, we can do without. So, but that was fine. If somebody doesn't want to participate, and the book was not controversial, it was just about my life and some of my relationships with some of the players that I had been involved with, but his agent did not want to.
Do you think Kobe knew that? You think he was aware that that was happening?
I don't know that. I never even asked. I never bothered to ask, which is fine. And again, you know, Pete, if someone doesn't want to do it, that's fine. I don't have any problem with it. It's, you know, if people ask me to do things, if something that I think is going to be critical about someone that I like, I'm not going to do it. I'm not. I'm not built that way.
But if it's somebody who brought you into their family at number 13, you know, a center for you, I think I'd do just about anything for them.
Well, life turned out to be pretty good for him. Let's put it that way, except that horrible, tragic Sunday day. It was horrible.
Right. Jerry, is there any trade that you're sorry you didn't make?
That I didn't make?
That you did not make. Is there any trade that you could have made and didn't for whatever reason that you look back?
Well, as I say, it depends on what owner you had.
Okay.
We could have gotten Dominique Wilkins, and we could have also gotten Julius Erving. And the then owner would not spend the money to do it.
That was Jack Ken Cook?
Yes. Yes.
Well, he was cheap in seven languages. He was... He was cheap with you. He was cheap. Explain what happened. What happened with both those guys? It was
ABA. Remember, they were kind of out there, being out there, and the team, the respective team, could claim them. And Utah drafted Dominique, and they didn't have enough money, or they didn't, for whatever reason. We could have gotten him for $3 million. And I said to him, we had James Worthy. We drafted James Worthy there. And the only two players in that draft that Terry Cummings was the other one. But to me, Terry wasn't a player for this team, but those two were. And can you imagine having both of those guys on your team? Oh, my gosh. I told Mr. Cook that Dominique Wilkins, he and Julius Erving may be the most two exciting players outside of Michael Jordan I've ever seen. The way they played the game, the flair that they played the game. And this is why people come out and see players. They want to see these freakish athletes that we see in the NBA. But these guys had skill. Oh, my gosh. You're talking about a three-wing circus with him, James Worthy, running on the wing. Can you imagine that with Irvin Johnson throwing the ball? Oh, my God.
No, I can't. Atlanta only gave up $1 million and John Drew to get him. But it saved their franchise.
Saved
the Hawks.
I know.
And Utah was saved. They need the money.
They had Julius Erving, same way, for $3 million. I forget what it was. But Utah, we could have traded Utah for him. And we could have gotten Julius Erving for money too. And
yeah, Julius was probably the $3 million because that's what Philadelphia gave up to get him, $3 million, and then gave him the $3 million contract.
Well, that was That was a smart move. All the people he put in seats, he earned his salary, whatever he made. He probably didn't get enough, to be honest with you.
All the people he brought out of seats.
I know. That's right. Well, one of the things that I would say to you, Pete, and anyone who's watching, some of these players are not only great players, but Pete, the one element that no one ever talks about, how many people will want to come and see this guy play?
Right.
They are the ones who make these franchises successful because they draw people. They draw people.
Who would you go to see play? Who would you pay to go see? I know you might get in free anyway, but who would you pay to go see?
Today in this league?
Today. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Obviously, LeBron James. I've always liked, I think Giannis, because of, you know, of the joy he plays the game. I enjoy his efforts every night. Honestly, I like to watch Joel Embiid play. He's got a playful side to him, but he's really good. My goodness.
Let me throw a name out there.
Chris Paul.
Curry.
Who?
Curry.
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
I had a chance when I was involved with the Warriors to see him play a lot.
Right.
You know, people
To see Curry play.
Who's that?
I pay to see Curry play.
Oh, for sure. There's only a few.
Right.
When you watch people play in this league, I tell you who, to me, this year has been the best I have seen him in a number of years. It's Chris Paul. Right. People talk about most valuable players. I love to watch Jokic play myself because look at him and look like he's stumbling around all over the place. This guy is so skilled. And his hands, okay?
Yeah.
I think in your lifetime, you've seen a lot of players that if somebody had a newborn baby and you handed it to him, there's certain people you would not hand that baby to. Drop it. Jokic is not going to drop anyone. And Kawhi Leonard's not going to drop anyone.
Right.
But there are certain people that resonate with me. And there's a lot of people out there that, you know, I know I'm going to miss someone along.
Yeah, I know.
And there's other players that you go see or want to go see for the teams. And some teams, there's not anyone I'd want to see play. And they might have good teams.
You know, another one that I miss, he's been hurt for so long, is Klay Thompson. And then you've got, you know, Durant. Who doesn't like watching him play?
Oh, my goodness. I just can't really say those two. But
and Kyrie and Harden. And yeah. And
oh, my gosh. Kevin Durant scores easier than anyone I can ever see. He never gets the credit. Never.
Right.
This guy is not a scorer. He's a basketball player.
Right.
James Harden is a basketball player.
Right.
But you know why? Because they pass, they move the ball, they make people better.
Right.
Kevin, I saw the other night what he's got 42 points and he's got like what 19 shots or 18 shots, something like that.
Right.
Come on. No one can guard him. You cannot guard this guy.
Right.
You cannot guard him. And then Kyrie around the basket, he might finish better than anyone. And this guy is just a magician.
Yeah.
And James Harden, oh my gosh. He's a brilliant player. He has a brilliant mind to play the game. And you know, a lot of people, for some reason, they don't resonate with this guy. Are you kidding me?
Right.
He's a great, great player.
All right. I'm going to end it on this note.
Yeah.
So Michael Jordan was quoted in a book, one of his books, that the player that he would have loved to have played against in his prime, in both their primes, is you. Did you know that?
Yeah, I know that.
Yeah.
Now, Michael and I, you know, as I say, Michael, I don't like to be a name dropper, but Michael is probably I don't know how you could find a more real athlete than him. I don't. He doesn't change. He still is really fun to be around. I see him every once in a while. And being around him is like being around a normal guy. He really is. And I don't know anyone, unless they would be envious of him, that could be jealous of him. I don't. I really don't. He is just absolutely the best of the best. And flattering, he would say that.
But who would have won? Who would have won, Jerry?
I wouldn't have won, that's for sure. But no one won anyway.
I think Oscar feels he would have won.
Well, I love Oscar, but I love Oscar, but no, he's
all right. Okay,
Michael was just, I had to say, watching him and LeBron James, they were probably the two most unique players I've ever seen. And that's not to detriment of all the other great players, but right. LeBron's size, his brain, his leadership ability have been amazing, absolutely amazing. And when I watch him, and I watch some of the things he does for his size, and to imagine that he is still relevant at this age, more than relevant at this age of his life, because he puts the effort in, he's become a much better shooter. He's gotten better every year, and great players do that. Now, maybe they lose a little bit physically, but you don't see it because they add other elements to their game that makes them more complete. And they're almost timeless. Some of these guys are. LeBron James, watching him. This year, he's had this ankle sprain, which is first time he's really ever missed any significant time. But I watch him play, and I marvel at how he plays. Kevin, I love Kevin. Okay, he's a great guy. Not selfish. He can carry a team against anyone. I don't care who they are.
Well. I'm going to end it on this note, Jerry. Jordan swears he's, competitive, up for every challenge, but he doesn't want to do this podcast either. So,
Peter, let me interject two things very quickly. One, I know it's probably 28 days or so, 27 days early, but a happy 83rd birthday to you, sir.
There you go.
And, what I found incredible, many things fascinating, but the number that cries out to me is this is NBA year number 75, and save for those 3 years, I guess, immediately after you had retired, you've been involved in the league for 61 of the 75 years. Have you stopped to think about that?
Well, it's pretty amazing, and as I say, I'm obviously getting to the end of the road, but I will say this, that I've enjoyed so many people, getting to know people, more importantly, let people know who you are. And as I say, I don't really, people that sometimes you have people that you're more fond of than others because you really don't know them. And I say sometimes that people don't want to know you because they don't know you. They see that maybe they think you're arrogant, you're something else. But I don't think people can survive anything unless you're yourself. Be honest. The people you're with. I say I love basketball players. Some of them are built a little bit differently, but at the end of the day, they grow up pursuing a dream, and many of them have walked away unbelievably successful, and they give back. And the ones that give back, those are the ones I'm most appreciative of.
Well, Jerry, you've been saying you're going to you're near the end of the line for about 20 years. I've been talking to you, and so I don't believe there is an end of the line. And so hopefully we can do this again. I really, really appreciate listening to you and your willingness to answer all questions.
Well, thank you. Great to spend time with you. Continue. Good luck, Pete.
Okay.
You take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Hoop du Jour with moi, Peter Vesey, and column castigator Frank Drucker. You can listen to all Hoop du Jour interviews by searching Legends Studios wherever you get your podcasts.